You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 9 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Travis Robson will be talking U.S. sell-off ShopRite results, horror GDP. Duncan Crossan, he's CEO of Lux, as they exit food to focus on jewelry, hence the name change. And Umori Samuel, FMI on protecting your side hustle income. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: automotive component suppliers commit 4.3 billion rand to establish operations in Schwane. And from CNBC, AstraZeneca shares drop 6% after company announces routine safety pause in coronavirus vaccine trials. Morning markets red, US down, S&P 500 off 2.8%, NASDAQ down 4.1%. Asia is red, Sydney off 2.5%, Turkey off 1.4%. Commodities red, Brent down below 40%, gold $1,935 an ounce, Rand 1695, and top 40 calling for a slight green open, about 0.1% up.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Travis Robson. He's co-head IG Markets. Travis, morning. Appreciate your time. Actually, a ton to talk about, but let's kick off with U.S. markets. They'd been closed yesterday. We had the big sell-off Thursday, moderate sell-off Friday, selling off again today. I mean, I suppose we kind of maybe get complacent, and we need to remember that, you know, nothing goes up forever, although it does just feel a little spooky when they start going down sort of 3, 4, 5% in a day.
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I just think it's a bit of investors pulling money out of the markets because of that Labor Day weekend. You see that often with investors pushing money into treasury or into other assets, but definitely a sell-off in the tech stocks. Always going to question the valuation of those tech stocks. They're pushed really, really hard. So I'm not sure if investors are getting a bit tired with the moves in the tech stocks and they're starting to question their valuations and the size that they have, or the amount of value they have pushed in the market. It'll be interesting to see how the U.S. market opens up today.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, truthfully, this is a sign of a healthy market. I mean, markets don't go up forever. At some point, investors do need to have a look at valuations and decide if they're comfortable with it. And this is just what markets do. They go up, they go down. Mostly they go up, but sometimes they are under pressure.
Absolutely. That's a market, as you mentioned, and you know, a sign of a good market is a market that has a bit of volatility. I wouldn't say too much volatility. We've seen some crazy volatility over COVID.
Yeah.
But certainly, I think for the U.S. market, I think as we start entering into questions around the elections coming in November, and if you look back at the periodic history in 2016 when Trump was made president, I think you're going to start to see a lot of people moving this market based on move the market on volatility based on these elections coming up. So I think for us as a stockbroking firm, you know, we're really watching these U.S. elections quite closely because we think it will breed new volatility into this market.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that volatility. 2016, Brexit, then Trump. It was quite a crazy second half to the year.
Absolutely.
We need to touch on the South African GDP, annualized minus 51, unannualized minus 17. I mean, not much to say except, I suppose, expected and a long road home that they're back to where we were, that, you know, as a country, we need to get our economy going again as the lockdown is eased. It's going to be a tough hill to climb.
Absolutely. I'm not saying we don't have serious economic problems, and we do, but I think SA, that should have been a little bit clearer. This assumption behind the 51%,
mm-hmm.
you know, as you said, it's, you know, it's actually really around 16.4 or 17%, mm-hmm. and I think, you know, that assumption behind the 51% is really going to push our markets into a dire strait. I'm surprised you mentioned the top 40 was likely to push 0.1% up today, as I thought it would be a really unhealthy push. But definitely, you know, the overall GDP numbers, if it's 51, annualized or 16.4% or 17% normalized, it's quite a shocking blow to our economy, and it shows that we have a lot of work to do. And in a lot of different sectors.
Yeah, it's a good point. We have a lot of work to do. And Stats SA could have explained that better, because I've seen some deeply mere. Economy's halved. No, it hasn't. ShopRite results. ShopRite is, they're just a machine. I mean, they were excellent results. And they're just taking market share. I suppose lockdown played into them. They also have some lower LSM. But, I mean, they are the top retailer in our market.
Yeah, I've always liked it. I've had it in my own portfolio, so I guess there's a bit of bias there.
Yeah, me too. Good fashion.
The rationale for buying it was, one, I like the lower LSN model.
Yeah.
And kind of like the Capitec model. Go low LSN and then start pushing high LSN. And I think that's what ShopRite's done really, really well. And they're starting to take the lion's share away from the Woolies and more from the Pick and Pay than the Woolies and the Spars. But one thing I bought it for, and I was quite disappointed in the results, was the African play.
Yeah.
Pick and Pay kind of went East Africa. ShopRite went West and hasn't done well in Zambia, hasn't done well in Angola, hasn't done well in the rest of the West. I see it's also got a bit of play in the Eastern Kenya, but it looks like it's disinvesting out of Kenya because it hasn't had success there. So I've just been disappointed with the African story, and maybe that they can get right, but yeah, as you said, phenomenal results, definitely taking the lion's share in South Africa, and really impressive results locally.
Yeah, I agree with that point. The rest of the continent's been a bit of a disappointment. I love your point. Start low LSM, push into high LSM. ShopRite's in my portfolio, and I'm chuffed with that. Travis Robson, co-head IG Markets, appreciate your early morning. Thank you.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Duncan Cross, and he's CEO of Lux Holdings. If you're wondering who is Lux Holdings, they used to be Taste, but they're no longer Taste. They're now down to their sort of luxury jewelry brands. It was results to year end February. Duncan, appreciate your time. You, in these results, there's still some sort of remnants of the old Taste in the business. But as we record here in early September, is it now just really very much focused on the luxury brands?
Yes, 100%. Thank you, Simon. Right now, our only operations are the luxury division, the remnants. We've now got rid of all of the food division, and what we didn't manage to get rid of, unfortunately, is currently in liquidation. Mm-hmm. So, yes, in these numbers, we see in continuing operations some of our road to recovery in the luxury division for the past year.
That luxury division, NWJ, Arthur Kaplan, and then a World's Finest Watches. How many stores is that across the three different brands?
So currently we've got 53 NWJ stores, 6 Arthur Kaplan, and 1 World's Finest store.
Is Arthur Kaplan more of the sort of upmarket? I mean, I know NWJ very well. I grew up in Durban. It was a part of my youth. Is Arthur Kaplan the sort of more upmarket branding, or are they similar?
Correct. So Arthur Kaplan sells mid-range watches and premium Swiss luxury, as well as, I'd say, appealing more to the aspirational middle to upper LSM shopper. So above where NWJ is positioned.
Is NWJ still predominantly KZN, or is that an old bias that I'm sitting with?
No, that's an old bias. Most of our stores now are in the Gauteng and surrounds, and we've expanded into the Western Cape and last couple of years as well.
Okay. Lockdown, these results pre-lockdown, obviously March, April, very hard lockdown. You weren't qualified as an essential service. So you would have been closed during that period, I imagine. Trading sort of since levels 3, level 2, how's that been going so far?
Yes, Simon. So we were fortunate. We were able to still take online orders when we were shut down.
Okay.
And we managed to start when some regulations were lifted mid-May. We were able to start shipping out some of the online orders. And then we opened officially again all of our physical stores 1 June. I think June was pleasing for us. We had that pent-up frustration, pent-up demand.
Yeah.
So we did far better than we expected. July also better than we expected. And then August, you know, fairly okay sales. Obviously not back to the levels we're at, but levels that we think are on the right path at the moment. And our online business has grown exponentially during this time. We've had shown growth of 386% and comparable sales of 185%, which is quite pleasing. I think we're not top of the pile as a choice of purchase for now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're fairly happy of where we've come for the first 6 months.
Yeah, online is interesting. I mean, I know Richemont and you know, they're in a different league in some senses. They've gone into online. My sense was always, I don't know, jewelry to me seemed to be tactile, but I to a degree not, I guess. And I suppose more importantly is you know, with your store footprint, there's going to be someone living somewhere in a more rural area who simply can't get to an Arthur Kaplan or an NWJ who therefore would look to use the online channel instead.
You're correct, Simon. We have that shopper as well as for gifting. So a lot of, I'm sure, family members, boyfriends, girlfriends, mm-hmm. buying presents and also then shipping it on to loved ones in different areas. So I think it's added... Yeah, it's a convenience to the shopper. It's definitely South Africa's becoming more comfortable with it, as well as the lockdown period. We all know it's across the behavior seems to have shifted. And I think there is some stickiness to it that will continue into the future. Yeah, surprisingly enough, jewelry, I think there is research done before. People are quite aware if they're going to make some bigger purchases.
Mm-hmm.
But for the gifting purchases, I think the pictures, the images and that give the individual enough of an idea of what they're buying. So it's not a lot of risk to that.
Yeah, and I'm thinking also particularly perhaps in sort of lipstick space. And what I mean by that, you know, people often say in recession, lipstick does well because someone wants to spoil themselves. Jewelry's not quite lipstick, but certainly I can see how that will play into it. And online certainly works in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We have most of what we find are self-purchases these days. So it's not... partners, husbands or spouses or mm-hmm. whatnot, it's actually far more self-purchasing happening. So it's exactly that. People treating themselves, feeling better and, yeah, essentially they're just treating themselves.
A last question. You know, obviously, a lot of your jewelry will have either gold or silver as an input. How sensitive are your margins or are your prices to consumers to these metals? Or are they perhaps a small part when you take into the craft and the precious and semi-precious stones?
Yeah, so it is sensitive. There's been a massive increase in the actual individual pieces, silver and gold, ranging anything between 12 and 18% the past year.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have found is shoppers are still buying into a price point in both businesses for jewelry. They, you know, if they've got R1,000 to spend, they're gonna find something for R1,000.
Gotcha.
So that is probably the biggest challenge in the business. It's more about affordability. This is what we got to spend. What can we find to spend? We haven't sacrificed margins mm-hmm. because of the increased price points.
Well, I take your point. You walk into a jewelry store with a price in mind rather than just walk in, because that could get very, very dangerous. We'll leave that there. Lux Holdings CEO Duncan Crossan chatting jewelry, chatting understanding how it all works. Really appreciate your time. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting to Amari Samuel. She is FMI Senior Technical Marketing Specialist. I'm going to be chatting income protection. Amari, appreciate your time this morning. Income protection, been around for a while, some changes coming from the FMI side. What sort of, I mean, previously, sort of occupations that weren't qualifying in the past for income protection? I imagine these were probably the sort of, you know, if you had a formal occupation, that was easy, but perhaps less formal became harder to actually ensure.
Absolutely. Good morning to you. So from FMI's side, we have pioneered income protection for people who couldn't get it previously. And as you correctly said, a lot of people, I think largely as a result of COVID-19, but even before that, have moved away from formal employment to doing a side hustle or having multiple occupations. Working in occupations that give them a bit more flexibility. And those are the types of occupations that we have started covering. So if you are looking at people who are working as freelancers, as an example, mm-hmm. in the past they were not able to get income protection. But that's really what we're able to offer them now.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, the challenge was, you know, that they might not, you know, I might be have a side hustle as a photographer or something like that. There's not a formal exactly. contract. It's not a defined, you know, I can't say to you, I earn X every month because there's a paycheck. It's a little more flexible. And you know, that brought the challenge to it. But in essence, this is a growing space. We're seeing a lot more of this side hustle, this gig economy, for want of a phrase.
Exactly. So what we've realized is that FMI's passion is about making sure that every South African is able to protect their income. And it doesn't matter whether you're earning your income from formal employment or a side hustle. The reality is that you rely on that money in order to put food on the table. So therefore, you should be able to protect it to make sure that if you do become ill or you have an injury, that you're still able to look after your family and to protect your impact, really.
And this is, and the phrase that you use at FMI is flexible cover in a sense, because it is going to almost, you know, it will be a policy, but from month to month, what it's protecting is going to potentially be different.
Yes, absolutely. So we do think that your policy needs to have flexibility to ensure that you can keep your cover in place. So I'll just use a quick example. With COVID-19, a lot of people were hit where they had been paying these insurance policies for a long time. Mm-hmm. And now they were in a position where they may not be able to afford their premiums anymore. So built into our product, we have lots of flexibility to ensure that you can keep your cover in place when times are tough. So just one of the methods that we use is something called the reinstatement option, where you can actually drop your cover if you can't afford the full amount, just to keep the basics in place. Or you can even freeze your cover and then reinstate that when you're able to afford it again. And that just safeguards clients to ensure that they don't have to lose their entire policy, because the risk is if you're going through a difficult time and you're now cancelling your policy, if your health has changed, you may not qualify to get that cover again. So we have flexibility built into the product to allow you to keep your policy in place, and then also as your income fluctuates, you're able to adapt your cover and increase your cover without having to go through a medical test at the later stage.
And that's a great point, because, I mean, traditionally, we mentioned up front, I mean, you know, it used to be very sort of structured employment and therefore very sort of, you know, structured insurance, both sort of inflexible. And the plan here is to really make that income protection policy flexible, much as your income, your job is flexible. In other words, to sort of work with you rather than try and, you know, fit you into a box which might not actually be right for you.
Exactly. We don't believe in a one-size-fits-all solution. People are different and they need a solution that speaks to their specific needs. I think one of the important points for me is that a person who is potentially a student or starting out, who doesn't have any debt or dependents, they may not need life cover now, but that could change when they get married or when they have kids. So what we allow clients to do is to potentially add on life benefits at the later stage when you actually need them without having to go through medical tests then. So there's lots of flexibility built into the product, because we really do believe that your life insurance policy should suit your specific needs at each life stage that you go through.
That's a great point, because it is different life stages coming along. Amari Samuel, Senior Technical Marketing Specialist, FMI. Appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website as well as the MoneyWeb app. Podcast at 7 a.m. same places, website and app, or wherever you get your quality podcasts from. The show proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their time this morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.